بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. It is traditional in the madrasas that when they commence a kitab, then they explain the gharz and the ghayat. What is the purpose? Why are you starting this kitab here? This is to enable the student to focus correctly. The kitab may be, example, a kitab of tafsir, right? So you need to essentially understand the message of Allah Ta'ala. But perhaps in the message that is put across, there is something that is related to history. Like, for example, Ashab al-Kahf, the people of the cave, Ozul Qarnain, right? So this is related to history. Now, if the student doesn't understand what is the purpose of tafsir, he'll make this into a history subject. Won't research it, won't find out the length and the breadth of this story, and he'll go into a different tangent altogether. He didn't understand what is the gharz, what is the ghayat, what is the purpose. Then these two words that have been used, gharz and ghayat, then they seem to be similar words, similes, but there is a fine line difference. Gharz is a purpose, and ghayat means the end, right? So you say, all right, you have done the business, so what was the end? The end of it was that I incurred a loss. So that's not the purpose, it's the end. It could be that the end and the purpose be the same, but they don't have to be the same. The end could be something else, and the purpose of doing the business is something else. Obviously, you go into a business for some profit and for some gain. It's the reason that you go into a business. So that will be the gharz. But the gharz and the ghayat don't have to be identical. They could be same, but they don't have to be the same. So they teach these things in the madrasas. That the child that is coming into a madrasa, then he knows, all right, how to focus, what must I get out of this, what I need to understand out of this. Otherwise, perhaps the whole year will go through and he will not understand what is desired of him, what's required of him. He won't understand. The end now says, I did the wrong thing. I didn't do the right thing. I didn't make the right choices. So from the beginning, they try and make the student understand that this is where you're heading towards and this is what you're supposed to be looking forward to. Mawlana Sadiq al-Yaqeen, his story was read some 1 or 2 days ago. So he was bi'at with Hadi Sahib rahmatullah alayh, residing in Makkah Mukarramah. So he had the blessings and the honor of being in Makkah Mukarramah, the resident of Makkah, then being honored with the Baytullah, the Qibla of the Muslims, and with all that, the company of Hadi Sahib rahmatullah alayh. So you got everything. You got it spiritual, you got the type of company that you would like, and then you are right at the center of all good. You can't think of a good that is not there in Makkah Mukarramah. You got the Kaaba Sharif, right? You got the reward of 100,000 for every namaz, then you got the direction of prayer in for the Muslims, right? You got everything. Two of your farz is complete at this point. Namaz and your Hajj is complete at this point. So you got everything. So, Hadi Sahib Rahmatullah, I spoke to him once, that Simora Sadiq Sahib, you haven't fallen short in trying and working. You worked hard in this path after you have taken bi'at, so you have worked hard. Alhamdulillah, I haven't neglected you. I'm concerned about you. I haven't neglected you. And you also have worked quite hard. But in spite of you working hard, and in spite of me not neglecting you, I don't see the desired results. Right? You know, the person that is working, then he sees the fruits, he sees some results. He knows the work, he knows the whole how it works. So at the end he wants to see some results. Like you're working with a student in Hivs, right? After a month, 2 months, 5 months. So the Ustad will know, alright, this is the student, this is what I'm teaching him, and this is the expected result. But after working 6 months with the child, and the Ustad doesn't see results, then he says, no, there's some problem here. What a problem, and we need to work this problem. What should we do here? How do we overcome this hurdle? Where is the problem? So they'll try to work out, alright, this is where the problem is. Patient was admitted. Parkland or somewhere was admitted. And sugar patient, so they were trying to bring him back to normal. Treating him, administering the better type of medication, good type of specialists, all are looking at him. But they see that the sugar is not just going down. Now, wondering now, you know, we administering the right type of medication, and we're seeing that he's eating the right type of food, and then he's hospitalized under our care, but where are we going wrong? So after a week or so, they had to change his mattress or whatever, pulled out the mattress, everything to just correct the bed. They saw that he was having one big slab of Cadbury chocolate every day. So now, when you are working with a person, then you need to see, alright, I need to see results. And this looking at results, it's such an important thing. Even Hadith teaches us, حَاسِبُوا قَبْلَ أَن تُحَاسَبُوا. You need to take stock of yourself. That where am I? I have started something. Am I progressing? Am I here just to occupy, just to fill in the time, Ramzan now, Rosa, so I can't do anything else. Some student complain, you know, the holidays are coinciding with Ramadan. So we can't do anything. Because the holidays in Ramadan, if it was in December, we could have done something. Then the holiday on the weekday is on Friday. Then we can't do anything. Friday we have to go for Jummah somewhere. If it's not our luck, then they ask us to come and perform the Jummah. But the whole Jummah is gone. The whole holiday is gone. So what's left for us? So we have to explain to the students, that's what we want. That we want you to do nothing. Bigar raho. This Ramadan must go, Ramadan must come, Jummah must go and Jummah must come, and then in this Mubarak way, you leave the world. Our Buzugana didn't say, what an excellent person is that student, right? Student of Deen. His whole time is occupied either in Kitab, either in the Masjid, either in teaching, either in writing something. So this whole time is occupied in this manner. He doesn't have too much of wealth, because if he's had too much of wealth, then the average person, one is you get an exceptional person, right? He's got the wealth, but he's still exerting himself. But the average person has got too much of wealth, then he's got too much of attraction. Go for Umrah, go here, go there. So the attractions will overcome him. But he doesn't have too much of wealth, and he's been blessed with ilm, so all his time is just occupied in the madrasa. Some dini khidmat, some work here, there. And I suppose it is the result of the dua of Ummul Mu'minin, our mother Aisha radiallahu anha. In Molio ke rozi ko zara tang kar do. The Molana's rozi, make it a little bit tight. So I was wanting to know where was the hawala. Then our Qari Dawood Sahib, Rahmat Damud Barakatun, he showed me the hawala of that kitab, I think in Shatibi or something, he found that hawala. But I was wondering why has Aisha make this dua for us. Right? She saw now how man works, right? Now one is a buzuruk, very great wali or something, he works differently. But normal person, if it's an overload of luxury and comfort, what happens? Then he's got attractions, distractions and attractions. And when he's got attractions and distractions, then he can't work, he can't produce. And number two, nobody can tell him, no, I got the wealth, but you don't want me, you keep your job, carry on, I'll carry on. So he'll have an independent attitude. إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَيَطْغَى أَرْرَآهُ اسْتَغْنَى. When he sees he's self-sufficient, then this is enough for him to go overboard. So this self-sufficiency doesn't have to be very healthy. What the West is teaching is to be self-sufficient all the time. So it's not a healthy thing for every person. For some person it's good, but for most people it doesn't work out. Either لَبَغَوْ فِي الْأَرْضِ. What's that ayat? وَلَوْ بَسَطَ اللَّهُ الرِّزْقَ لِعِبَادِهِ لَبَغَوْ فِي الْأَرْضِ. If Allah Ta'ala gave an abundance of rosy, right? Gave an abundance, opened it up for everybody, then what would have been the net result? Then there would be chaos, corruption. لَبَغَوْ فِي الْأَرْضِ. وَلَاكِ يُنَزِّلُ بِقَدَرِ مَّا يَشَاءُ. Allah Ta'ala sends down, but in due proportion. He knows. He's not blind, na'uzu billah. He's not incompassionate. He's compassionate. He knows. إِنَّهُ بِعِبَادِهِ إِنَّ رَبَّهُ بِعِبَادِهِ خَبِيرًا بَصِيرًا. Allah Ta'ala is watching. He's seeing. He knows what's going on. Once I was in Jalalabad, Hazraji Rahmatullah, just before Maghrib, maybe about 20 minutes before Maghrib. So, poor person came in, and he's complaining, ghar jana hai, I need to go home, I'm pareshan, I'm in distress. So, Hazraji Rahmatullah pulled out 20 rupees, and gave it to him. For that zamana, 70s, that was a big amount of money. So anyway, Hazrat gave him the 20 rupees and then looked towards me and he says, Mudi Ibrahim, tum sochte honge, you're thinking that, hey, this person needed to be housed, given some shelter till the morning and then let him leave in the morning. What is he going to do now? Bichara, how is he going to fare for the night? So Hazrat explained the verse of the Quran Sharif. وَلَا تَبْسُطْهَا كُلَّ الْبَسْطِ. The verse of the Quran Sharif. وَلَا تَجْعَلْ يَدَكَ مَغْلُولَةً وَلَا تَبْسُطْهَا كُلَّ الْبَسْطِ. When you are spending, then don't be miserly. لَا تَجْعَلْ يَدَكَ مَغْلُولَةً. It means don't tie your hands on your neck. That means you're very tight with wealth. مَغْلُولَةً وَلَا تَبْسُطْهَا. And don't be too spendthrift, so generously just giving every completely in everything. فَتَقْعُدَ مَلُومًا مَحْصُورًا. And then he says, if you're going to do this, then you will be filled with remorse, just giving away. What's going to happen to you then? Giving away, either you are holding it too tight or you're giving away too freely. Both ways are not healthy. You're holding it too tight, then you'll be called a miserly person. Stingy, miserly, and you don't know the needs of people. So you will be looked at with contempt. People look at you with contempt. How much you can spend, the amount that you can give, give. Give freely and Allah Ta'ala will grant you freely. But if you don't give freely, then Allah Ta'ala will give you also, but He'll give you tight. Right? You need this, I just give you this much. If you need this, then I just give you this much. But you're giving a little bit freely, then Allah Ta'ala will grant you freely as well. But by the same token, you don't give everything away. Give what you can manage and what you are comfortable with, but give. Now, if you don't apply this rule, then what will happen? Then either you'll fall into trouble and distress, or you'll be looked at with contempt. This person is too miserly. One person had a nice ring, you see. So his friend saw that ring. So he says, you know, as a remembrance, can't you pass on that ring to me? You know, remember you. Now, the friend turned out to be a miserly person. The miserly person, sometimes he can just sell you away. He's too miserly and he needs that wealth. So for that greed of that wealth, he can sell his friend, he can sell anybody away. So the greed is so much. He's so tight, so greedy. So he doesn't want to part. So now his friends ask him, just give me the ring, be a remembrance. So he says, you know what? No, I won't give you the ring, but whenever you see your finger to be bare, then you think of me, you know. Hey. I asked for the ring, but I didn't get it. So there's a better way for you to think of me. So they got the stories, the cover-up stories, they have got it, you see. So this amassing wealth and not spending in the path of Allah Ta'ala, that's wrong. And number two, this being over generous, more than what you can manage, that is also a problem. You'll give everything today, and tomorrow then you'll be begging. So the right thing is, everybody's rights, give them freely, give them more than what they are, what they deserve. Hazrat Shaykh al-Hadith, rahmatullahi alayhi. Really, this Buzugana, we quote them. Why do we quote them? Is that, in my understanding, they were the excellent application of hadith. Look at hadith, and then how it applied. I can't find another example. But anything that you're looking, and you want an application, you know, that hadith being applied, give everybody atiz al qurba haqqo. Give everybody's right. His right, give it. Give it to him. Give it happily. Haniyam Maria. Give them with a cheer, give them full, give them complete. And especially two class of people, hadith says, Uhadhirukum, I warn you of two class of people, one is woman and one is children. Because both of them, normally they can't speak for themselves. So when they can't speak for themselves, then the brothers, then they take advantage over them. So therefore the hadith is, by these two class of people, you just be careful. If you're not going to be careful, then you'll catch it somehow. Some other millions of ways, then to punish you is millions of ways. But on your side, you must be very careful about the rights of these two people. There's a lot of ways you can scheme, work out and all that, and just monopolize the whole situation. You can't do it, a lot of ways. But then, when Allah Ta'ala grips you then you will regret the day you were born. So these two people's rights, be very careful, be very, very cautious about. One is woman, and one is children, small children, they can't speak for themselves. So the Shaykh and his father had passed away, and it was about winding the estate. So, until around the time we were staying in India, so there wasn't this municipal line for water and all that. In fact, most of the time you don't get electricity as well. You make your own arrangements for the lamps and all that, and municipal water, you don't get it at all. So what most people would do is that they would sink a hole, borehole, and you would take water from that. Around the time we were there, so they used to do. Now, it was a family house between Hazrat Sheikh and his sister, Rahmatullahi Alayhima, right? And that had to be divided. So obviously, in one house, there'll be one borehole. And وَمِنَ الْمَاءِ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ حَيٍّ life is with water. No water, there's no life. You know, by Allah Ta'ala there is nothing short. إِمْ مِنْ شَيْءٍ إِلَّا عِنْدَنَا خَزَعِنُ. Allah Ta'ala says, I got stocks of things. So, just think for yourselves, the world population presently, recorded world population is about 7 billion, right? Maybe slightly more, but this is the recorded population. And on an average, say, every person is using about 20 liters of water, right? Right. There'll be people that are using about 500 liters, right, every day. Every day, bathing, jacuzzi, swimming, and using water like wild, right? But let's average it out. Everybody's using water, say, 20 liters, minimum, right? Minimum. Should be even more. So that means 7 billion times 20. How many is that? Huh? 140, right? So 140 billion liters of water Allah Ta'ala is providing every day. 140 billion water liters every day. No. Without any doubt, don't have any doubt. But I ask you, is there any shortage in the treasure of Allah that He's giving so much? One rain falls, and how many millions, sometimes billions liters of water has come down, right? And the most expensive water is the mineral water, right? And the mineral water that just came from above, that's the priceless water. Both for the normal person and for the farmer, that's about the most priceless water. Because the real life comes from there. But in one single rain, and how much millions, in fact billions of liters Allah just gives. But can you show any shortage in Allah's treasure? He gives. He's impressing upon us by gift freely. Rights of people, and poor, destitute, people that need your assistance, give freely. Don't hoard it, don't hold it. I'm giving it, and see, I'm giving it to you. Isn't it a lesson that every day, 140 million, in fact billion, is giving away. Every day, without, you don't find anything contrary to this. All the time. No contradiction. 140 billion every day. No contradiction to this. So he's saying, when I'm giving, then why are you holding back? You will give and I will give. You will give and I will give. The more you will give, the more I will give you. مَا أَنْفَقْتُمْ مِنْ شَيْءٍ فَهُوَ يُخْلِفُ. The plan of Allah Ta'ala is you spend and you'll get a replacement. You spend and you will get a replacement. You see, dogs and cats, when they give birth, how much they give birth to? 5, 7, 9, right? Right. And sheep and goats, 1. Right. But you'll find farms and farms filled with cows, sheep and goats. But do you find farms and farms full with dogs and cats? Do you find that? But sheep, goats, cattle, you'll find farms of it. Why? Though that cattle, sheep, and goats are perpetually under the knife of the butcher, living under the knife, but you're spending it correctly, right? Because you're spending it, therefore I will replace you. That's the law of Allah Ta'ala. You spend it, and I will replace you. Water you're spending, and I will replace. Meat you are spending it rightly, so I will replace you. But this thing you don't need, is birth rate is very high, but then too you don't find farms of this thing. So, in the Sahifa of Hazrat Idris alayhi salam, or Shis alayhi salam, it was preserved there. There are some anecdotes, right? So the anecdotes, one of the anecdotes read that, O wealthy person, I haven't given you wealth that you may hoard, but I have given it to you that you may spend upon my bondsmen. The system of Allah Ta'ala is that رَفَعَ بَعْضَهُمْ بَعْضًا دَرَجَاتٍ. Allah Ta'ala creates levels, right? In intelligence, there's levels. Strength, there's levels. Wealth, there's levels. Everybody is not identical. Everybody is not the same. Someone is more intelligent, someone is less, someone is average. Wealth the same, right? Then strength the same, someone is stronger, someone is average, someone is weaker. So Allah has created. لِيَتَّخِذَ بَعْضُهُمْ بَعْضًا سُخْرِيًا. For this world to operate, Allah has created the system. He hasn't created everything equal. But what he wants, that the one that has got more, he must look favorably towards the person that is less. He mustn't extort him, he mustn't take advantage over him. The giver is Allah Ta'ala. He's created these differences, these variances he's created. So this variances that has been created, not for you to extort, not for you to be boastful, not to be giving reminders of your generosity. But I want to see, I'm giving you something more, and are you then looking at my bondsman favorably, or are you just hoarding the whole thing for yourself? He wants to see, Allah wants to see this. You spend, Allah spends on you. You spend freely, nicely, then Allah will give you in different ways. Like you're giving well, you're giving nicely, then Allah many a times, He sees you favorably like this, He saves you from problems. You, your wife, your children, then you get saved from problems, sicknesses, problems, disaster, calamities, fights, differences. Allah protects you. But you're spending, Allah looks at your heart, at how freely you're spending, so He grants you freely as well. Right? But then you start hoarding, and you take advantage, extort people, then you are then confronted with problems, some problem, some misunderstanding. Someone is abusing you. Some problems coming up. So Allah Ta'ala has got everything. He's got stocks. You know. Problems also He can give you stocks of it. So comforts also He can give you stocks of it. But trust Him, and He says, I'm giving you so that you can then share with others. But you want the control and you don't want to share at all. Then Allah says, what's the point of giving this person here? I'm giving it to him. And he was expected to see his people. He doesn't even see his own people. He's so miserly. So anyway, we're talking about the story of Hazrat Muhammad Ali. So Hazrat then explained, see, as far as the distribution, Allah Ta'ala does the distribution. Inna Rabbaka yabsutu rizqa liman yasha'u wa yaqdir. Right? He gives it. He is for someone He expands, increases, and someone He decreases. So you don't worry about this. You give what you can manage. After that, don't worry, you know, what's going to happen to this person, how is he going to fare, don't worry about that. What you could manage, what was easy, manageable, then Allah sees all. And He knows why He kept this person in constraint, and this person with abundance. He knows why He did it. These variances, these differences that He's created, He knows why He did it. In Farsi, you've got all these small stories, you know. So, one Nabi, perhaps Musa alayhi salam, whoever it was, he saw a poor person covered in dust. You know. He doesn't have sufficient clothes to even cover his body. Yatiman za muqrabatin o miskinan za matraba. Covered in dust. So he doesn't have even the means to cover himself, so he's covered himself with dust, so that at least his body parts are covered, concealed. So he saw this person, so he raised his hand, made dua for him, that Allah must elevate him. Anyway, after some time, Musa is walking past the marketplace, and he sees a huge crowd, one is trying to see above the other. But you know, when there's a big crowd, then you can't get a good view. So you'll stand on your heels, on your toes, to see what's going on. So he's watching now, what's happening here. So in the market center, there's one person put onto the cross, and he's about to be crucified, about to be killed, shot dead. So Musa identified the person straight away. This was the person that I made dua for. But he asked him, what happened? So no, yes, he was poor, and everything was carrying on well, struggling, meeting ends and all that. Then he became prosperous and prosperous and prosperous. Then he started extorting, killing, robbing, cheating. And he had that power now. He began to abuse the power. wealth translates as power. So when he had that power, he began to abuse that power. And then it brought him to this position where he murdered and killed and robbed and cheated. Now, so he's being punished for that. So it's a system of Allah Ta'ala in this world that he's created these variances and he knows why he did it. كَانَ بِعِبَادِي خَبِيرًا بَصِيرًا. He is fully aware of what's going on. He knows the person. If he's in this state, what will happen to him? And if he's in this state, what will happen to him? He knows. So you don't worry about that. So my mind was at ease now. Alright, Hazrat gave 20 rupees and go. And strangely, the person took the 20 rupees and no fikr and carried on. You know, if someone was really at that part of the day, you know, just before Maghrib now, no house, it would be really parishan now. But he had no fikr. So I understood now there's something else here. So we're coming back to this, as the Sheikh Hamza's story. And when that house had to be divided between him and his respected sister, rahmatullahi alayhima. So, obviously in the house, there'll be just one borehole. So the borehole, he made sure that he brought it to the sister's side, not to his side. One is, you know, you can manipulate, do things, monopolize, do things. Allah is seeing, see the grand plan, he's seeing, he's watching. Watching what you're doing exactly. What moves and maneuvers you're making, he knows. Like for example, you know, you got a CCTV, right? And you gave someone, your child, alright, they take this box of chocolates and just distribute it. That's all you told him. But from the CCTV, you are watching how this child is going to behave. So you see now, he took about 10, grabbed it, put it in his pocket, and the rest is just, right? So you're seeing, you're watching this child, what he's doing. So Allah is watching exactly what you're doing. The game that you're playing, he's seeing exactly what's happening. So next time, then he will also give you also tight. He'll make it tight for you. Because you making it tight for people, making it difficult for people, then he'll tighten for you as well. You give freely and he'll give you freely. So anyway, his sister began to cry. And she says, "Why you're treating me like a stranger, that whole thing giving it to me and you're dividing the house and all that, you know." And then this borehole, instead of you taking it, you're putting it to my side. So she began to cry. She said, no, this is the law of the Sharia, that when the elder dies, then the estate has to be divided. That's the law. Right? So according to the law of the Sharia, I'm dividing this property. Half, this is for you and this is for me. Right? But if you feel that I'm going to treat you as a stranger, no, you're not going to be a stranger. You'll be in part of this house and the relationship, the muhabbat will be exactly the same. There won't be any difference in the muhabbat in the relationship. But this is the law of the Sharia, that when someone dies, then that property has to be divided. So we're dividing it accordingly. But you talk of muhabbat, you talk of the relationship, there'll be absolutely no difference in that. Exactly the same. So when man was like this, Allah Ta'ala blessed him. This is progeny, the type of work Allah Ta'ala blessed him with. He was honest, he was good. And then Allah Ta'ala blessed him and blessed his progeny and blessed his families. So with Allah Ta'ala, what we need to do is to be absolutely true, honest, clean. Don't play games. At any time, we don't play games. And we slipped up, rather correct ourselves straight away. Because sometime it is like, you know, a fisherman, when he casts, right? So he saw the fish is biting, then he gives it some time for the play, right? That he's going away. So that fish thinks, no, hey, I caught the bait, I caught the thing and I'm running away. And then it is just a matter of time for the person to reel in. And then that thing gets a shock. You know, what I was thinking and what it turned out to be. So you get a little bit of a play from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Alright, I'm going to see now that you got a little bit of play, a little bit of respite. What are you going to do with this respite? Are you going to think about it, reflect and correct yourself? Or are you going to go further into wrong? You're going to go further into wrong, then I will squeeze the thing for you. I will tighten for you as well. So, this honesty and being truthful, and being good towards others, ahsin, kama ahsanallahu ilayk. See, we lose sight, many a time we lose sight, that the good was done to us by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is not our own achievement, not our own dream. Allah ta'ala, in His mercy, in His compassion, in His love, He was considerate, was kind to us. But He wants us to do the same to His bondsmen. And I've done this, I've given you something, some superiority, but now you must show the kindness to others as well. Not for you to hoard. So this is a statement that was in the Sahifa, small booklets of Shi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam or Idris Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. The other statements also there for us to ponder and learn from. Another statement there is that it is right for a person to know the conditions of his time, halat, ahwala zaman, conditions that are prevalent, you must know, right? So, what do you mean by understanding the halat, the circumstance? What is the meaning of that, understanding circumstance? So, some things are open to interpretation, and then every person will interpret it according to his convenience, right? Every person will interpret this type of statements according to his convenience. He says, no, see, we're living here now in Overport, so women have to drive, right? Why? Because if they don't drive, then who's going to take the child to school? And who's going to do the shopping, right? So, what is the khulasa? Khulasa is you have to drive, the woman has to drive. Otherwise, the man is going to shop, going to business, someone has to do his errands here. Who's going to do his errands? So, the statement says, مَنْ لَمْ يَعْرِفْ أَحْوَالَ زَمَانِهِ. If you don't know the circumstance, then you are ignorant. You don't know things. So, people then misconstrue the statements according to their convenience. According to your convenience, you're going to misconstrue. There is a way to explain this correctly. So, one youngster, so he was in a similar predicament, and he explained, all right, this is what's happening, wife or the mother all have to drive to do these errands. So, off the cuff, I told him, why don't you do this? He says, you know, on this WhatsApp or something, you get that gum tree, right? So, you request for a driver, preferable, a little bit of an aged woman driver, so you can talk to the woman, can talk to them freely. So if she's 50 or something, then there is no real attraction in the person, and then she's looking for a job, you can make the job available for her. So he requested a woman driver, 50 and above. Surprisingly, in one day there were 70 applicants. One single day, everybody is desperate for the job. And up to 2,500, 3,000, we are prepared to do the work. 5 days a week, we are prepared to do the work. Any errand. Let's see now. See, if you don't misconstrue these things, you will get your work done. Right. Then I explained this person, then you have about 3 advantages in this. The one advantage now, the wife and the mother, they will pay proper attention to the house. Household duties, the children, upkeep of the house, preparing of the food. Their mind is not scattered. Otherwise, well, the mind is half this side, half that side. Right? Half in the house, half outside the house. Right? Now the husband comes in and he wants proper attention and he's not getting the proper type of attention because her mind is divided. Half in the house, half outside the house. Now, that he comes into the house, so her mind is all focused. House, the children, the husband, upkeep. See? So her mind is just in the house. It's not outside the house. So he receives a better level of attention. Right? Otherwise, if she's out, and say, for example, the child came in. Now, is the child going to get that attention? Child needs attention. Any child needs attention for his well-being. And if he's neglected, then now parents are going to cry, hey, the child went into some wrong habits. Why you neglected the child? Why you were driving around? Right? So the child was neglected. So now then, after 10 years, when you saw the results, then you were crying. Now the wife is at home, she's waiting for the child. Child must come at this time, she will look at him, his tomorrow's sabak or whatever. She's seeing that he's doing all his work properly. So she's giving a proper attention to the child. And she knows that my mind doesn't have to be divided into anything else. Just the home, children, upkeep, this is my work. So that's the first advantage, right? The second advantage is this. If this driver is going to drive the children to the school, madrasa, all that, and do the errands, then they're not going to be worried about buying a BM for the wife as well. Small little Corolla they can manage. But if the wife has to drive, she's the mistress. So she can't be driving in a small, cheap Corolla. If he's driving in a Merc, then she needs to have a BM so they can show the status. Right. So that BM now, if this is, the Merc is half a mil, then that will be also about half a mil. But you buy one cheap, little bit of a used Corolla, right? It can do the work, over port runs, right? 70,000 seats are too much. She can do all the run. So you don't have to buy, you don't have to pull out so much of money. So a cheap thing will do everything, right? So that's the second advantage, right? The third advantage is this, that she will be able to maintain her parda, whatever parda she needs to maintain, she's able to maintain it very easily. But if she's out now, can she maintain that proper level of parda? A woman's tabiat, every woman, you know, whether it's pious or impious, the woman's tabiat, you may just look at it, that when they want to come out of the house and they're dressed very well. In the house, it'll be a little bit casual, but the day they want to come out or the time they want to come out of the house, pious or impious, there's something, I don't know why, but they want to be dressed up. Woman coming out of the house, even for work, she'll be dressed up. Man will be alright, I don't say he'll be not neat. But she won't take that type of caution like the girl will take, the woman will take. So now she's saved in that way as well. She's not going to be harassed. Nobody's going to harass her. Nobody's going to tease her. Nobody's going to pick her out. But that woman came out of the house. You know, statistics shows that women that are at the workplace, approximately 90% of them at some level are abused, harassed or something. Look at, lately I was looking at some stats. Right. You talk of Japan and you talk of a country that is about most advanced, right? But now the women are all working. So when the women are working, now the women are complaining that we're getting harassed. In the workplace we're getting harassed. In the trains that we're traveling together we are harassed. So now they are thinking seriously of having separate compartments for the women. By the hadith in the Quran says told all the time, told by women stay at home. You live separately. Don't you go out freely every day now. One is there's a need. Someone maut, mayad, or they're going for talim or something. That's a different thing. You're just going for the need, fulfilling the need and coming back. But now every day you're coming out. So now you're in the public eye all the time. In the public eye now, these thoughts are bubbling in the person's mind. Okay, but this woman looking cute. This woman looking beautiful. So I need to start off some conversation with her. So one thing leads to the other, right? And then you have a whole community of women that are not chaste. They don't have the level of chastity that's desired. But you started off from this point when you took them out of the house. Allah Tawfiq Nasib.